Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson, joined as always by Kevin Zimmerman. I hate doing intros again. We just did the first intro. We had to scrap it. I'm never going to reveal why, but I hate doing the second one because it just feels unnatural because it is. We just did one the natural way already and it didn't go well, but we're back.
It was questionable. We didn't mean it to be.
Yeah. Let's move on. The point I was making there is that, like, we somehow found a way to get an hour in here on Friday afternoon to talk. We're going to try again and succeed, I hope, beginning of next week. So a day or two from the season opener, and that will be when we kind of talk about season expectations. The whole season preview, quote unquote, episode will be next week. But we haven't even talked since the first preseason game. So there's not a lot to unpack necessarily, but there is tidbits and storylines and things that are kind of going on within those games and kind of developing as the preseason concludes.
Yeah, there's resting guys to rest them because we're all very aware that human bodies aren't great at playing 82 games and playing four games before that and playing training camp before that and playing all summer. There is hiding a new offensive system, and with new players, there's the question of whether what we saw was legitimate and whether it's good or bad.
And we saw good and bad. I believe you were the chief person among them in like the Denver game, which was the last game, where you were specifically saying on Twitter, like, this is not good from DeAndre. This is the bad version of him in terms of, I didn't really feel like, I feel like honestly that was one of those games where he has like 4 points and 8 rebounds, and Rubio had 5 of his 7 assists, 2 or 5 of his 9, I want to say. I'm not sure, but I know it was 5. 2 DeAndre Ayton and just set him up in a couple of spots. I think that's normally one of those games where he would fade out a little bit, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because especially defensively and just on the glass, he wasn't really there in that game. So that was one of the things that I noticed. And then with that came the fact that Rubio was, I've seen Ricky Rubio play basketball a lot. I know what it looks like when he's trying to spread the wealth. He was particularly trying to find Ayton pretty much the whole time he was out there. It wasn't even like a first couple minutes type of thing. And again, they're saving their offense. They're not revealing the looks for Booker right now, which I don't know if that's a great idea in the first place, because you've got a really new group here and you're just trusting the IQ of your players and the overall just basketball intangibles that they have to be able to take this next week off and get actually their real offense going that is going to be mostly revolved around Devin Booker, because it should be. There's a fine line here between Rubio setting up Ayton and just getting him in the right spots and getting going to Ayton needing Rubio to set him up and be in these spots. And the latter is where I worry that the Suns are going to take too much of this as DeAndre needs these looks from Ricky consistently to stay active and involved in games, because he shouldn't need them. It's just going to help him.
So was it the first game where he, what, played like 18 minutes and scored 16 points with like 10
boards?
That was
good him, yeah. That was
the
good
version. That was offensive board points. That was that kind of stuff.
Not much Ricky. It was one or two assists to Ayton, maybe.
Right, so yeah. That's great. I mean, I'm assuming that the chunk of what Monty said to you guys this week about this is a new training camp, they're going to put in some more stuff, is this is how we're going to involve Devin Booker playing off Ricky Rubio. And there was one play that I think everyone can guess if you watched most of the preseason, where the three-man game with them was beautiful. Booker used Ayton as a screen, kind of shuffled around it on the right side, and he swung one of those, I don't remember which hand it was, one-handed.
Right hand.
Right hand, yeah.
Sad that I know that. Wow. Continue.
It makes sense that it's right hand, but he swung those one-handed passes that he's kind of, we haven't talked about it a lot, but he's really good at swinging balls across the court with one hand off pick and rolls. And it was to Rubio on the left side of the arc and he just basically almost a touch pass to Ayton, who was diving by that point toward the rim for an easy dunk. Like, that was the beautiful, here's how you three should play with one another. And that's good stuff from Ricky Rubio, who in that situation, obviously he's not a great three-point shooter, but he's still, the play around him set up for him, it doesn't even matter because the defense wasn't on him. The middle was cleared out. But aside from that, we haven't really seen like how Booker's involvement's going to work, how he's going to play off Rubio. So, I mean, that's obviously the biggest thing because, look, we talked about his Devin Booker's numbers might drop, but we assumed that would be because he's getting open looks and that sort of thing, and we haven't really seen that, but preseason, yeah.
So people gave Monty Williams praise for what he said after the game in Denver, which I agree with. I asked, how do you think... You told us Rubio and Booker, they're going to figure it out. You're not going to have hands-on anything with them figuring out how to balance the ball, really. Which actually turns out not to be that true, actually, because he kind of kept Booker out of sets. But regardless, when Rubio is this on the ball, what's going to happen is they're trying to like get the rest of the offense going. And what Monty Williams said was, we don't want to have to rely on Devin to bail us out in every game. That's not how we're going to like succeed in this situation. That's not how it's going to work. That is a valid point, and it is a correct point. He is right. But that is how the Suns have played the past 2 years. They have been hoping and praying that Booker is going to bail them out. And then some nights, like the game in Philly where he scored 43, the game against the Spurs where it was the opposite. He had like 18 points and 13 assists or 12, whatever it was. This team was so overly reliant on him, so he is already going to have to get used to a team, at least for the time being, not overly relying on him. So you can have all these different offenses in and still have him getting the ball a lot, but at the end of the day, this is going to be another primary ball handler with him, and it's going to be another primary scoring option with him, and they're two different guys. If it was a ball-dominant point guard that he was playing with and it was just a rim-running center or whatever who like didn't need post touches, it would probably actually work out better. But there's wealth to be spread, and he's just going to have to get used to that. And I sensed in the games, at least, that he was still kind of feeling out his spots a bit more, because I think that some of the best scorers in the league, I think CJ and Dame have mastered this with each other. CJ finds those little pockets, especially when they bring him in first off the bench, when they both go to rest, and with the second unit, he knows that's his time to cook. Devin's going to have to figure out, okay, when is my time to cook? I think it was every second before because that's what they needed from him, and they're still going to need that to a certain extent, but it's going to be too much from him if he tries to do that. So when does he overextend? When does he not? It sounds confusing and difficult when it's pretty simple, but it is confusing and difficult for him, and it's going to be. And I think these first like 10 or 15 games are going to be not an issue, but they're going to be a lot more difficult for them to succeed in than I think people realize. Just because the team is much better and they have a point guard, I think there's actually more for them to figure out. They're going to be way better. Like them in game 60 versus last year is going to be a huge difference. But I think out of the gates, they're obviously better this season, but I don't think there's a humongous jump just because there's more to figure out. It's not as simple as it was last year.
That's a really good point about Ayton and Rubio, because they're kind of tethered more together.
They are.
I mean, that was part of the sell with Monty and DeAndre, was DeAndre's going to get the ball. And even when we talk about him, I mean, how many times did he just get the ball in the post this preseason? There were a few times it didn't feel like that many. Lots of his shots were Ricky finding him on the elbow and him just popping that shot that's like right around 15, 16 feet he's really good at, or diving to the rim. But yeah, I mean, his offensive evolution too is going to have to kind of adjust and calibrate to how this offense works. And basically what we're saying, I think, is we have no idea still how this offense is going to work, other than that they're going to try to pass it a lot, which is great and all. That Portland game, they obviously hit a bunch of threes. That's great. But Booker and DeAndre weren't in there. And so that's going to be the really interesting part. I mean, when you talk about that bench unit, that's great for them, I guess. Frank Kaminsky had a great preseason. That's another takeaway. I think you were trying to lead me down this road, but yeah, the first preseason game, I know it was like half of a quarter, but DeAndre Ayton did not look good that I saw. As far as defensively, he was still doing the, oh, I made one effort on a switch or one effort to on a pick and roll play, and I look good doing it. But then once the ball gets behind him, he doesn't even chase for rebound. Like, I saw him not chasing for rebounds, and that's scary. Like, if the play gets behind him, is he just going to stand around and watch? And so I know it's the preseason, and Jokic was just fouling because a guy got by him, and he's just like, yeah, I'm over this, but he's earned that where I don't worry about.
Well, so much of his improvement is going to be just eliminating those things, right? We talk about all these things he can get better at. It's more about just cutting out the bad stuff.
Yeah.
That's,
he can do.
And most of it is defensively and just right place, right time.
That's a good way to put it. So, I mean, I think a lot of Suns fans, too, are a little worried about it, too.
Yeah.
As we watch Luka Doncic ball fake.
I don't even
Kawhi
think it's that. I think that.
I know, but
you just spend a couple months away, and then you see him in a game, and your trepidations. You're like, oh yeah, he does this. Like we talk about him all off season and outstanding rookie year, 16-10, super efficient. And then you watch him in the game, and you're like, oh yeah, like he's still this type of player to a certain extent.
Because that reminds me of Arizona Ayton. Not even last year, Ayton. Obviously there was a lot of it, but
he had a play in either Sacramento or Portland. I think it was Sacramento where he caught the ball under the basket, bobbled it, but he had the ball upright above his head. Three guys around him. He's 2 feet from the basket, and he passes. It's like, no.
Yeah.
Draw a foul. Took zero free throws in the preseason. That's been another discussion point, but I mean, the fact that that doesn't surprise me, and when I saw it, it wasn't like a, whoa, that's crazy. It was more like a, yeah. Yeah.
We have a lot of questions that have yet to be answered. I'll just say that much.
Do you want to go a little bit further down the pecking order from preseason? Because I think Frank Kaminsky is probably the biggest.
Let's talk about what surprised us.
Yeah, Frank is probably the biggest one where it looks like he went from, are they going to play him? Like, they'll probably just put Bridges and Oubre at the four a lot, right? And he probably just won't play that much, to where it's like, oh, like they might need him. And if Dario doesn't work out, maybe Kaminsky will actually like start, because then at least you get like the absolute assurance of a 40%, 39% sort of 3-point shooter
you
at
hope.
The four. And that's if Dario's like a train wreck, though, because I think Dario's good. And even if he's not as great as he could be in this role, I still think that he's far more useful in the starting lineup. But the biggest Frank surprise, as you tweeted, I think in the Portland game or something like that, was that 1-3 dribbles, making the right pass. It's not that he's taking 1 or 2 dribbles, pivoting, looking up, and then throwing the ball. He is taking 1 dribble, and then on the second dribble, he already knows where he's passing, and he's just waiting for the angle there. And that's like legit vision.
I'm like worried with, he's in this bucket of guys, like even Mikel's in this, where I'm like, I really do hope they're 35% and above shooters, because if just two of them don't shoot like 37% even, then this bench unit's going to have a lot of trouble. But he's reminding me of Channing Frye in some ways, where it's just the threat and the gravity of having a big shooter like that, and those 1 or 2 dribbles are really important, because if you can make good decisions off that after you get one guy completely flying by you out of the play, and then 1 or 2 guys have to help on the dribble drive, then you're 1 or 2 passes away from an open shot. So that's, I mean, what, he had 8 assists the Portland game, and so that's the most encouraging thing about that, because like Channing Frye, Jared Dudley, those types have made livings off, like, you don't think of that as playmaking, but when you're that good of a shooter, it kind of is. Who else? Still on that? No?
Nah.
Cam?
What'd you think of Cam?
I like him. I mean, he's going to get bullied on defense when he's on defense. I think he tries. I think he's smart, and he'll just have to like get stronger, hopefully.
The first game was, his defense was pretty good.
Yeah.
Relative to expectation.
But like dying on screens, just bully ball the stuff. I mean, you can't really say much about that. But offensively, I mean, is he better a shooter than Booker at this point? Probably, from three. I mean, it looks that good to me. And he's also one guy who's,
it's tough because of roles.
Yeah.
If Booker wasn't Cam's role, he'd shoot 45% from three. Yeah. So
I don't know.
I think Book's the better shooter still. I'll say that, and that'll...
Shooter is such a broad term.
It's so funny to watch people just draw him off as a shooter now because he's shooting whatever 33, 34% in his career right now. And it's just like, yeah, because he taking half of them, not half of them, but a lot of them off the dribble. And the catch and shoots are like he's 3 feet behind the line. It's so much of that stuff. I think he's still that shooter. That doesn't matter anyway to the conversation. Sorry. Cam was the 0.5 standout probably. Yeah. Him and Frank were probably the two guys who fit there the most. But again, it's like we're coming to this conclusion we knew we were coming to on draft night where it's like, okay, well, even if he's good, where do you play him? It's now you're just sitting one of Mikal or Kelly instead.
If DeAndre has a bad night, you have to play Baines. I guess Kaminsky could slide to the five, which he did a little bit, but yeah.
I like the Kaminsky-Sarge front court, by the way. I hope to see more of that. It was a very small sample in Portland. That's when they were all playing really well, but it just seemed like the two of them passing around and stuff. Obviously, defense, no bueno, but Frank kind of looked passable on defense at points. Seemed like he knew where to be.
I think if you made that, like DeAndre's one of the first starters out, and then that's the way you get DeAndre more touches when Booker's out, you stagger it like that where Frank... Dario are in, get Ayton out of there, bring Ayton back when Booker's out. I don't know, that might be something that they could look at, because that's, for a team that doesn't have a bunch of one-on-one guys, I don't know if Kelly is that guy, Tyler Johnson, I mean, those guys stretching the floors, yeah, I like that. Who else? Who else played enough where we could judge? Kelly looked rusty, but...
They waived the three training camp bodies. They did not convert any of them to two-way contracts, so they still have a two-way contract spot open. A lot of guys are getting waived right now. Alphonso McKinney got waived earlier today. They are third on the waiver claim priority, so if they wanted to cut loose on one of the point guards and add another wing, or add a, probably not another big, but, or add just more of like a 2-3 combo instead, because they just have so many point guards. I guess Ty's a combo, but Tyler's more of a 2 than a 1 right now for them. Yeah, I don't disagree, but just kind of it's one of those very, very minor annoyances where I'm not going to burn down buildings right now because they couldn't execute properly on a second two-way contract. But
there are enough
all those good guys got signed right after draft night and like beginning of summer league. They got Jared Harper in that window, and they probably should have gotten their second guy too.
I'm wondering how many two-way guys are, like, not rookies. Because, I mean, that like, McKinney's a guy who's probably too good to be that, but...
I just think they need another wing, because it just doesn't make sense. If two of the wings are out for one game, it's your...
Yeah.
You're playing one wing the entire night.
While we're on McKinney, thoughts on Draymond Green and Marquese Chris?
Next question.
You don't care
1%. I don't care at all about this subject. Guess what? The Suns suck at player development.
Do you like
newsflash?
Okay. Well, what about Marquese Chris on the Warriors? Do you like that?
I'll talk about that.
Okay.
It's not going to work out.
No.
He's bad. He's terrible.
Okay.
You know what no one is talking about? The Warriors need Marquese Chris so bad they just cut Alphonso McKinney, who has not been good for them. To be fair. Been a rough, but he had moments for them on, and again, it's a different team now. They don't have four stars or whatever, so maybe he doesn't play off that well when you actually need something from him. But that's how bad they need Marquese Chris right now.
Yeah.
It's, what is Golden State? Move the ball, smart decisions, all this kind of stuff, and people are surprised that Marquese Chris has skill and talent. Of course he does. He always has. I'm ready to be wrong, but Dragan, on the other hand, you just look at what they need. Like, actually, I would say whichever one of those two was in Milwaukee, I would just say they probably have a better shot.
Marquise
Dragan and Dragan and Golden State would not go well.
You don't think?
Maybe it would go a little bit better, but that's just because Dragan's skill set is easier to place anywhere.
Yeah,
but I just think that Milwaukee is the better spot for either guy.
By the way, Dragan's quietly had a good preseason also.
Better.
I didn't see.
He's been better, but no one's
talking
about it.
He's shooting like 60% more scoring than Marquese Chris. Yeah.
More scoring like within 5 feet of the
basket.
Have
you popped into one of those games? I haven't, honestly.
Yeah.
Did he play center?
He's just doing the Brook Lopez thing. Just stand out there, take a dribble or two when you need to, crash the glass, things like that. He made a couple nice passes here and there.
Good for him. Here we go.
Yeah, I'm rooting for both of them. Chris is like a fun upstart young player on a Warriors team, like trying to make the playoffs. It would be really cool. It'll be really great.
He has a long way to go, but
I mean, the good news for him is that it's a different team now with two less stars for this season. But you look at like Looney, Jones. I mean, God, going back to like Anderson Barajal, like they've made a lot of JaVale. They've made big men work in there, and Keese has enough talent. It's just a matter of.
I actually popped into that game before Draymond spoke about the Suns ruining his development, Chris's development, and I was like watching them too specifically because I was curious, like when Marquise Chris screws up, how is Draymond going to act? And he is actually like really positive. He was like directing him. There was one play where he told him to like go stand on the other side of the lane and help in a certain spot. And Chris did it, and I thought, oh, that's a moment when Draymond might get upset and be like, you need to do this. But no, he gave him a high five and was like being very like
teachy. Need him. They need
him. So, I mean, that's a good environment for him, though. Like when you have a guy like Draymond who's going to be patient, that's not two words.
For that, the time being.
Yeah.
Until they're 3-4.
And Marquise is still starting for them. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway. Do you want to take that and
did you know the Suns are a terrible organization, Kevin? Isn't that crazy?
We've never written about it before.
That's nuts.
All the
Who
players,
says those things,
all
man?
The players fail, and not it's us. Not the organization's fault.
Draymond can say whatever he wants, man. He's Draymond Green.
Yeah, just I'm like, fine.
Every side of that argument, including like Draymond shouldn't talk about what he doesn't like. He can say whatever he wants.
Yeah, I wasn't offended. I just wanted to put it out there.
Okay.
I just wanted it to be for the record.
So instead of us going into season preview-y stuff right now, what we're actually going to do is some season preview-y stuff, but NBA-wide, we're just going to talk about other teams that aren't the Phoenix Suns for about 10, 15, 20 minutes right now. So if you're only listening for the Suns, we'll see you Monday or Tuesday.
Just leave.
Adios. If you want to hear some scorching hot...
Please stay.
The Hornets are a sleeper in the East takes. Stay here. They're not. That was just bait.
Also leave if you want that.
I can't deliver there. So basically what I'm going to do is we have a story going up on Saturday. I really encourage you to read it. I often don't do that for I rarely do that for stuff we write and like saying that on the podcast, but it's one of my favorite things we write each year. I really like the way it turns out every year, and this year no exception.
I like to be right. Also, at the end of the year I go back, I'm like, I was correct, or I wasn't completely stupid.
I did really well last year. Did really well.
I thought I did too. I don't remember.
We asked who was the second best team in the West, and I went hard on the Nuggets. That worked out well.
I'm following you.
I picked Giannis for MVP. I picked Gobert for Defensive Player of the Year. We both picked Aiden for Rookie of the Year. Whoops. But it is a new year. And in the new year, all eyes are on Staples Center in LA. Our first question was basically the Warriors dynasty is dead. So who do you think now is in the best position to win
it all? This is the first time. Yeah, sorry. This is the Parody. First time I'm looking at your answers. So
Oh, you haven't seen mine? You have it up too? Okay. So what I did here is, spoiler alert, I wrote the questions. Not spoiler alert, that's just more of like an inside tidbit and saying like, this is why I'm saying. Put in italics in the best position so I could answer with the Los Angeles Lakers, basically. Because my whole case here is the Lakers have LeBron. LeBron is the greatest basketball player of all time. He just put up 34-9-9 two postseasons ago on one of the worst like finals teams of all time. Carried them to the finals on 42 minutes a game. He was also Space Jam 2 lifestyle choice LeBron last year. But I think that the rumblings out of LA that this is an FU, this is still my league season from LeBron, if we get anything close to that, he's still the best player in the league for me. Like I after what happened last year, I understand. But as of right now, not knowing how he's going to look this season, now my answer could change 5 or 10 games into the season. It could be totally different. But right now, I still think that he's the best player in the league. And if you put him with Anthony Davis and those two are just wreaking havoc the whole time and they have shooting around them, I think they are in the best position to win the entire thing. Now, are they going to, or are they my pick? They are not. Do you actually think that's not even like a, that's not a fair argument?
What?
Just what I said. Like that The core argument is LeBron, if he's the best player in the world, right about next to it instead of what he was last year, which wasn't even, he made second or third team All-NBA, I think.
Yeah, but okay, so that's why I picked LeBron as MVP last year.
Yeah, whoops.
But if Giannis is, are you picking Giannis as MVP this year?
I picked Anthony Davis.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
LeBron's going to get him at least 30 a game, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, I see what you mean, and the way he... they played this preseason where, I don't know, they're saying he's like the point guard. The point is he's acting like a point guard and playmaking and trying to dish it instead of last year's weird, let's get a bunch of non-shooters.
He is going to average a career high in assists.
Other dribble men to dribble around for LeBron. Like, that was dumb in retrospect. I guess it's easy for me to say that now.
It's just a matter of if Space Jam 2 Blaze Pizza LeBron James, The Shop LeBron James, HBO partner LeBron James, Taco Tuesday LeBron James.
An off-season off is good for him.
Yeah.
Like, the first in what? Forever, so
if that LeBron shows up, then this thing is like dead already. But
Dwight
if he
Howard
actually
looked good, like in the other night.
Let's not do that. let's just not do that.
Their roster's not as bad as I thought.
It's you really forget about like the Danny Green, JMZ. You forget that like they're not really relying on Kyle Kuzma that much, so it's more of a bonus from him. Honestly, their move is to trade Kuzma for a guard who can share the ball with LeBron. That's their move, because Kuzma can't start, because Anthony Davis doesn't want to start at center, so they have to start Howard or McGee. That means LeBron's already at the three. That means Kuzma's got to play the two or the one. That ain't happening. LeBron ain't guarding twos or ones right now. In the playoffs, maybe. But that is my case. But with that being said, Space Jam 2 LeBron, just going to repeat it one more time, that could rear its ugly head. Anthony Davis, not great at staying healthy.
Yeah.
He's very good at staying healthy for 60 to 70 games, but this is like a situation here where they're relying on him specifically so much. I wonder how it's going to go. Oh, by the way, they got Anthony Davis and LeBron James in the span of 2 years while being an absolute clown show of an organization. They did this Frank Vogel, Jason Kidd thing, which is weird. It's really weird.
Mm-hmm.
There's bad, sketchy vibes coming from there. So I just think that this has way too much potential to go wrong. But in the universe
right now,
where everything goes right, I think they're even better than the Clippers when everything goes right for the Clippers. I just think they'd be better.
Yeah. I actually don't know about that. I'm just assuming it's not going to go right, I guess. And
exactly.
I haven't even put my hat on to
the Clippers.
See rose-colored glasses, whatever that saying is.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, if one of LeBron or Anthony Davis gets hurt, one other injury to like Danny Green, Avery Bradley, something, then suddenly that team looks so different to me, I guess. I mean, how they were playing against a bad Warriors team, I mean, the other night makes you think that maybe Frank Vogel's not a bad coach. And honestly, I always thought Frank Vogel was a good coach in Indiana. And Orlando, who knows what they're doing as an organization. So I think he's a good coach, but there's just too much backdoor. I don't know what I'm trying to say. Stuff in the late. It's the Lakers. I'll just say
you're not overlooking it from the perspective of the question. It's all how we take the question.
Okay.
Moving on to the next one. Looking outside of LA, who's your pick?
Oh, sorry. I had the Clippers for this, by the way.
Yeah, you said that kind
Did
of.
Did I? Yeah.
Yeah, I came across.
You know who's on the Clippers. I had the Nuggets.
Me too.
You know why? Because
I had to rewrite my whole thing, you son of a gun.
I mean, the odds are the Bucks or whoever comes out of the East is going to have an easy time to get there, and that's obviously the Bucks, I think. I'm not sold on the Sixers, but even so, I think it does count that when you get to the finals, if you're healthy, that getting through the West means you're legit. And I think the Nuggets have so much depth that even they can, like an injury or two, they can sustain it.
Postseason experience I got last year is huge.
Yep.
It was big for Jamal Murray. I'm not a huge Jamal Murray guy still, but I think it was important for him. It really showed in the beginning of that Spurs series too, where Derek White was taking his lunch, breakfast, dinner, dessert, everything from him. That the worries, but I think he's better and he's going to continue to get better. I just want to see from him, Murray specifically, is I don't think he comes up, and he really shouldn't, when we talk about the best players in the league under like 25. he's not even one of the first 10 names, I think, but he should be. And I think this is the type of year where he could have that. But I mean, this is just pretty simple. It's Nikola Jokic is a top 10 player in the league. He's the second best center in the league, first, depending on how you look at him and Joel Embiid next to each other. Not only that, but he averaged, I want to say off the top of my head, like 26, 13, and 8 in the postseason. It was something ridiculous with ridiculous efficiency. He got better in the postseason. He did play over the summer in a long playoff run, so we'll see on like fatigue and longevity and stuff. But Jeremy Grant and Paul Millsap, Will Barton, hopefully not having as bad of a year as he did last year, because he was really tough last year. It was
injuries
brutal.
Injuries too, I think.
I believe so, and that's where I get to Gary Harris too, who was going through injuries a lot last year. He's healthy. I think like Malik Beasley and Monte Morris in terms of a backup backcourt is probably the best in the league, I would say. That's just off the top of my head right now, but it's got to be the best in the league unless there's a team we're thinking of. Probably Lou and Shamit is probably there, because Lou just eviscerates souls off the bench. But
Torrey Craig's
there. He can do the defense for them every now and then on a tough matchup. I think that's the one thing with them is Jeremy and Torrey Craig enough, and Gary Harris enough perimeter D for them when they come up against like the Clippers or the Lakers or just any other real matchup where their size on the wing. When Westbrook and Harden, so that's probably Jamal's just probably guarding Russ, and then they're putting Gary on Harden, I want to say. Probably. Gary Harris is really good. Again, like I've said that 3,000 times out loud in my life, and that's 3,001. I think he's legit.
You haven't even got to Michael Porter.
Yeah.
Is he healthy? He looked...
I didn't think he looked alive. I watched a lot of him. It's excruciating how I had to watch AAU tape, but I watched a fair bit, and he did not look like the athlete that he once was. So I think he's still getting back, but
it might take a year.
I think that's pretty much the thing there is Will Barton having a comeback year, Jamal Murray really progressing, and then Porter being a top three, top five rookie in this class. Because Porter, the thing missing on their team, is that guy. Because we just mentioned Jeremy Grant and Torrey Craig guarding perimeter guys. I'm not saying that's what Porter is going to do for them. It's more the opposite, where they have a perimeter on the ball threat with size who can score. And then for him, it's going to be more about just like two dribbles and shooting every now and then, but mostly like energy stuff. So it's going to be interesting to see how he gets in there. That's how he's been playing in the preseason. But I really like them. With that being said, you said them, so I said Philly. Okay. Where are you at? Remember, I made the bold proclamation when that happened that I was like, this could go horribly wrong and they could trade one of them within 6 weeks. I still think that's on the table.
I like Philly.
But they're my pick in the East. I believe I picked them to make it.
Aside from Embiid, like Tobias Harris he can fit on any team and score 18, 20 points. Ben Simmons makes everyone better. Al Horford is not like going to get mad if he doesn't get touches. I guess I have questions about their defense with those two bigs and how they can, I mean, just their offense is going to have to be different than most NBA teams' offenses, but Al Horford's too good to not figure it out, and so is Joel Embiid. So also Josh Richardson's on their team, right? So there's stuff to like.
It's basically what you just went over. You look at their starting five, and Josh Richardson is not just an underrated solid two guard. He's legitimately good. Like, he is, I think if Josh Richardson's on a bad team and he's your number one or number two, they just did a lot of Justice Winslow point guard stuff in Miami, so they never really went to him enough. But I think he's a borderline Eastern Conference All-Star on a bad team. I think that he's got that type of skill in his game that I think people don't, they just see the grit, toughness, defense stuff with him and shooting threes. But I think he's got some legitimate scoring capabilities, and that's really important to phase out here, because you mentioned Tobias. I think he's going to settle in much better. But then Simmons and Embiid, so he's the fourth option on offense. Al Horford, again, you're not asking too much out of him. I just don't know about him playing the four at this age, necessarily. But Embiid is, I think Embiid's still like outside of Philly, and maybe there's some national media, but he's so good defensively. Like, he's probably a defensive player of the year guy if he could stay healthy for 70 games and play at the same level for those games. And Simmons defensively too is really underrated. Zach Lowe's been saying like they could have three all defense guys, and I think that's legit. I like Thibault. I like Zaire Smith.
Ooh.
I like them a lot.
What does their bench look like? They have James Ennis. I don't know why I just, my eyes went to him. That's not important at all. Korkmaz. Yeah. Thybulle. Zaire Smith.
The depth is shaky, but I mean, it's because their starting five
Mike Scott's
is going to
be. Mike will, Scott's a good bench guy.
He will shoot the ball.
Yeah.
One team that we didn't talk about that you want to specifically like spend a minute or two to bring up. I think we both wrote down the Warriors here because you put down you're the most interested in watching them just because it's Steph. It's a Steph team. I put it down because it's like a, it is a really, really good litmus test for D'Angelo Russell and like, okay, like you're not going to be the number one option. You're going to be playing off the ball a lot. Can you do all the things that everyone is, you tweeted like, oh, turned it on and D'Lo got beat on a back cut. There it is. Can he do all of these things to prove how legitimately good and like versatile he is? He's not just a ball dominant point guard because he's going to have to play off the ball there. And then obviously like Marquese Chriss adds some extra incentive there because he's going to be playing important minutes for them at the beginning of the season, it looks like. Draymond is one of the most fun players to watch in the league when he's all there, and it took
fit
him
Draymond
until the end of the season.
Yeah.
I have them down. New Orleans, obviously, I mean, we don't even have to really go there. And I wanted to end everything and call it a life when I saw the news this morning that he's going to be out a couple of weeks. It's Zion. It's brutal.
Same knee. And then I had the Mavs as the other one. That one's pretty self-explanatory. Porzingis looks like he's decently healthy. I tried to put some teams on the East on this, and I just was like, no, I'm not really into
it. The people
it.
Who are high on the Mavericks and the Grizzlies, I just need to, and this is not like the Suns guy coming for them. It's just, you need to sit down and explain to me for 3 minutes on each team what exactly it is. I understand the Mavericks is like, Luka is a god and Porzingis is not as good as you remember. It's like, cool, Porzingis hasn't played in 18, 20 months, whatever it is, and he's never like, these injuries have been a-coming, and he's 7'3". Their third best player is either DeLon Wright, Seth Curry, or Maxi Kleber. One of those three is their third best player. So if Porzingis goes down, that guy is now their second best player, and we're back to last year's Mavs team, but probably worse. I don't understand. It's just like Luka is a all NBA guy.
Yeah. What if he's an all NBA guy and they're actually fun to watch? I want them to be fun to watch, I think, is
why.
You
did mention Carlisle is like the third wheel here, not like any other player on the team. Yeah. Like he is their third best player.
Do you call him a sorcerer or a...
Some sort of enchantment powers he has.
Yeah, one of those Dungeons and
Dragons. He refuses to have like one of the five worst teams in the league, even if like his rosters year after year have provided him that a lot since they...
I like DeLon Wright. He's good.
I like DeLon Wright too. Remember we just talked about the Sixers and their fifth best player is Al Horford or Josh Richardson, and then you get to this team and it's like,
okay,
look at all the teams up in the Suns. Their third best player is either DeAndre Ayton or Ricky Rubio, and these guys got
I'm
the line.
I'm
going to
go change this. What other team is fun?
The Grizzlies, though. Hold on. Who's their best player? Jaren Jackson Jr.?
Yeah.
He's really good.
He's fun.
But he's fine. Like, where's... the Suns, every other team has... I don't get it.
All right. The Knicks are fun in, like, a bad way.
Sure.
Does that count?
Yeah.
Okay. What else?
Can I get one more thing?
Yeah.
Just because I was ranting. Yeah. Have you played in a fantasy football league before where it's pretty active with trades throughout the whole year? Because it's hit or miss for people. Our league is like we trade all the time. It's insane.
Not super, no.
Okay. So my friend Steve, who's not going to be listening, he does not like my voice. Shout out to Steve. Hello.
What's up, Steve?
He will gas up guys. He is so good at this. Just gassing up DK Metcalf and Terry McLaurin, whatever that guy's name is on Washington.
He's great.
And then he trades them in week 6 or 7 and he gets a little bit more value than he should have out of it just because he's in the group text saying these guys are good and you're just subconsciously reading these things while you're at work and you're thinking, oh, yeah, DK Metcalf not so bad and he's been kind of decent this year. Portland is doing that right now with Anthony Simons through the media. And it is a travesty. How is Anthony Simons' trade bait a thing right now? I keep hearing this from everyone. They're like, they're a dealer. They got a trade or two to make. Anthony Simons, they can move. Zach Collins. It's like, Zach Collins got bodied in the playoffs. He had his moments, but he was getting bodied down low. And the Sanford Simons, he hasn't played. The last game of the year where he scored 37 or whatever.
But he's like 12 still.
Jamal Crawford at 50. Is someone signing him? He's 12 still. That's accurate. Look, he's probably a legit like rotation piece or something or whatever. Like, there's obviously hype coming for a reason. But Portland is just, we're already gas no break on this whole thing. With him being like, everyone knows the Anthony Simons buzz now. I read like five different features on the guy in the offseason in July and August. And it's just Steve with DK Metcalf. That's what it is right now. And it's pissing me off. I don't like it. Now I have a grudge towards Anthony Simons. Must be a nice kid, but it's making me angry. Anything else stand out to you doing this doing this exercise? We did our usual players who are you're interested to watch. Mine is like this really long spiel I won't get into.
You called out my Hassan Whiteside on the Blazers as being an intriguing pickup. Or was it like, what was your question?
I think you specifically phrased it as like he's a really good defensive center. And I just think that Hassan Whiteside's days of being good at anything are behind him.
Nah.
I am not claiming to have watched much Miami Heat hoop lately.
Nor am I.
And it's more off of the consensus of informed others where I will go.
I just think it's a fun thing that they have not had is a rim protector, gonna go fight you type guy. I guess Nurkic is kind of the fight part. But I don't know. I thought it was sneaky. You asked me what sneaky pickup that we're
contract year, Hassan
about.
Whiteside, to be fair.
Oh, yeah.
Contract year. I picked Portland to miss the playoffs.
Yeah, that was weird, man.
Just the Anthony Simons thing, but in a different way where it feels like everyone has to mention with them they have a trade or two to make. That's usually not a good thing. People act like it's a good thing that they're gonna be better. It's like, no, if they need to make a trade or two, they're bad. I think that with them, Mo Harkless, now Farouk Aminu, were pretty much low-key the identity of their team, or at least the identity of their team beyond the two guards, and they lost both. I think if they would have kept one, they would have been salvageable. Mario Hezonja might play minutes for them. Like, seriously, he might play minutes for them. We know how that goes. And then
it's fun.
It's shaky over there. And then we didn't mention it. Anthony Simons. Is Anthony Simons better than Seth Curry?
No.
He's not. So that's another downgrade. Like, they have some downgrades, and then Nurkic might be out the whole year. He's going to be out at least a couple months, at least.
Yeah.
So I just think there's too much for them to... They lost too much. If Nurkic is fully healthy, I pick them, but...
Do we know who their, like, wings are, though? Because that's... Like, is Nasir Little going to have to play other than Hezonja?
That's the other one. Remember when there was a Nasir Little buzz coming out of the draft? Like, oh, Portland loves Nasir Little. Great stuff for them. They loved that pickup. Shut up, poor Olshay's working the phones. God bless him. Rodney Hood, Mario Hezonja, Nasir Little, Kent Bazemore. Those are the four. Guys are going to have to play serious minutes.
I'm not going to doubt Terry Stotts until Terry Stotts makes
the
me.
That is the counterpoint. You were early on Stotts. Like, when we first started like getting to know each other here, you talked about Stotts like a lot, and I was like, this guy seems to know what he's talking about. A lot of Stotts talk.
I always think that Blazers are not good, and then they end up going to the conference finals or some. Like, I just have to. Same thing with Spurs. Okay.
Couple big picture things to kind of put a bow on it. I asked in my like rapid fire questions thing on players, and I'm gonna like relay it back to you. I named five young guys, basically saying, are these guys closer to being young stars who carry bad teams to the playoffs than we think, or farther? And it's so. I'm going to actually put it to you that simply. Do you think these guys are on pace, meaning like they're on pace to eventually become this in like 2 to 3 years or whatever? Are they farther, which in like you're not even sure if there are these guys who are star All-NBA caliber young players who are going to carry their team to the playoffs? Or do you think they are farther away? Closer, farther, or like we're on pace? And on pace, that means like 1, 2, 3 years from now, maybe.
Okay.
Booker.
On pace.
That's what I would say. Closer would mean like it's either happening this year or next year, and I don't think so. It's more about what's around him, honestly.
Yeah.
Luka. I think it's closer. I think it could happen this year.
Yeah.
You can't shut down this year. De'Aaron Fox.
Oh, yeah.
Closer?
Closer.
Me too. Trey. Young. You looked at me like you needed a last name.
I did.
In the East?
Farther than... Wait, what is this relative...
Farther means like you're not sure it's going to happen within 2 to 3 years. That's what I would phrase it as.
Wow.
I'll put him in farther.
He's farther just because I don't know. I don't know.
I'm not sure. Need more. Need like 60 more games. We talked about this somewhere where I said I needed more like Trae Young, De'Aaron Fox.
If he puts it all together and is consistent, then yeah.
I think we talked about them two versus each other. But I think I'd rather have Fox, that's for sure.
Yes.
We are all eating too. If you're listening to this at this point, which means you love basketball and you haven't watched much Sacramento, watch them this year. De'Aaron Fox is incredible. Karl Anthony Towns is the last one.
On pace.
I would agree. So power ranking this in terms of like where we think their trajectories are as young players in this league, with Luka and Fox at the top, and then Booker and Kat, and then Trae Young at the bottom. That's where we're at.
Yeah.
I think that's fair. And if Book flips situations with Luka or De'Aaron, probably would change.
But those four, other than Trae, those four are pretty super close.
Yeah, it's not that bad. I'm interested. That's like the group, and that's where Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown should be, but after last year, ish.
No.
Not sure.
Why wasn't Donovan Mitchell on that list, Kellen?
I don't think he's as good as people think he is, Kevin. That's why. So with Chris Paul in OKC, 30 seconds.
Yes.
You believe? Like, are they going to win 38 games? Can't trade him. No such thing.
Honestly, they're going to win more games.
I heard Russillo say that. No such thing as a tradable contract.
They're going to win more games than the Suns. It might be like two more games. Oh, God. We're going to have to put this down on paper.
Yeah, Danilo doesn't stay healthy. I get scared.
That's true.
Did you pick the Spurs to make the playoffs, by the way?
I think I did.
Me too. I don't get it.
DeJounte?
Do people forget DeMar DeRozan's like an all-NBA caliber player? I know he takes mid-range and it's like style-wise with LMA, it's barf and you don't want to watch them, but
they're both jerseys are boring.
Both of them are all-stars. And then they have DeJounte, Derek White. Rudy Gay was good last year. That's six guys right there. My boy Lonnie. Yep. Got some G League time last year. He's going to be ready. And if he's not ready this year, you know what, Kevin? He's going to be ready next year.
I believe in my dude.
He's going to work out. I pick the Heat to be the 3 seed in the East.
Ooh.
I pick the Magic to be the 4th seed in the East.
Why did I pick the Celtics to be the 4th seed?
That is what I was not going to do. So pretty much how I looked at the East was Bucks and Sixers, like combination of players / Bucks have Giannis and shooters. Sixers have the best starting 5 in basketball. After that, who is the best player in the Eastern Conference after that? It's probably Jimmy Butler, right? Is it Kyrie? I don't think it's Kyrie.
What if Blake Griffin is better than Jimmy Butler?
Whoa!
I'm a Jimmy Butler hater, by the way.
Oh, maybe.
Do you know this?
Oh, I did not know this.
I like how hard he plays and all that good stuff, and I'm fine with him being a psycho, but does he really make a team better?
So my case for the Heat as a 3 seed is that Jimmy Butler is the best player in the East, and they have like a lot of pieces around them. I think the one thing to watch, and I heard Zach Lowe talk about this, and it just makes so much sense, is Goran's expiring contract.
Because
that's not only a big contract you can move, but he's not just an expiring contract who sucks. Like, teams can actually use him.
Yeah, if he has a good start.
And then if he's on your team, he's on your team. They still got Justice, Bam. There's a lot for them to figure out, question mark-wise, but I like that. So that was my case for the Heat, is that you got a really good player, a top 5 coach in the league, top 7 coach in the league, however you want to phrase it.
I think GM said he was 2nd best this year in the survey.
Makes sense.
Behind Pop after, yeah.
He's legit. He never gets enough credit. It's just you saw like the Rodney Magruder, Derek Jones Jr. like churning those dudes out, and one of them turned into Josh Richardson. Another one was Tyler Johnson. It's just
think of how much respect he has after last season. Yeah. When they did nothing, and he's still getting these votes.
So that was my case for the Heat, but maybe that's just the Pistons. Like, Blake, and there's just enough around him, but then I remember Andre Drummond and Reggie Jackson. I'm like, you're not going to make the playoffs. Yeah. Never mind. See you later. And then Magic is the 4th seed. Like, Vucevic was close to an All-NBA guy last year. He was awesome, and then I just think they have a lot of bodies. I really like Al-Farouq Aminu for them. I think that they just have a core 8 guys. So they have DJ Augustine at point, who is the X factor for them, I think. I think that he needs to be as good, if not better, last year. we're going to act like Markelle Fultz doesn't exist until he does something.
Yep.
He, by the way, he was the least efficient player in the preseason. You took enough shots to register for like 40 players or whatever. It wasn't great.
No.
DJ Augustine, Evan Fournier, and Terrence Ross on the wings. That's three. Somewhere in that mix is Aaron Gordon, Jonathan Isaac, and Aminu. So that's six. And you're just talking about pretty much we're going to have two of these guys on the floor at all times. That's Ross, Isaac, Gordon, and Aminu. Clifford's defense, their defense last year was already pretty good. Isaac's going to be a year older. I think Gordon's going to be better too. And then Aminu's good. And it's just this type of team where Aminu fits really, really well.
Yeah.
And then behind them, of course, Vucevic is seven. And then Bamba, we'll see. But I'm willing to include him in there. That's eight.
Yeah.
And I just think in the East especially, that's a top five defense in the league. And then I think you get enough offense if DJ's good. That's my case for them as a top four seed. And the Celtics kind of just lost a lot of dudes and no one noticed. They have Kemba. Kemba's fun.
Are the Nets going to be good?
I picked them as an 8 seed and I was thinking about picking them to miss the playoffs. I don't trust it.
I don't trust it either.
You know why? Because they were so fun last year and then you put Kyrie Irving in there. And after what happened in Boston and how much he has the ball. Just, it was so, the ball was moving there. It's... Spencer came in, got his D'Lo. That's the thing, is like they managed to make D'Lo and Dinwiddie and all those LeVert work, so maybe it's not exaggerated for Kyrie to come in, and maybe they're the team that's the third best, but...
Brad Stevens didn't get him to work it with Tatum and...
You did not pick them to make the playoffs, by the way.
What, Nets?
Yeah. Yeah, or no, no, you did. You picked them as a seven. Who'd you pick to miss? The Magic!
Magic.
You can still change this, Kevin. Did I woo you over?
No.
You've got the Pacers. By the way, you got the Pacers as a 5 seed. Oladipo's probably out till the All-Star break. Do you want to change your mind? Are you still in on... They are... I think that...
Mad respect for Nate McMillan.
Is it crazy for me to say, like, I think that losing, like, Darren Collison, Corey Joseph is kind of a big deal for them, even if they got Malcolm Brogdon? With Oladipo out. That's why I'm saying that. With Oladipo out.
No, that's, I like Brogdon.
Our boy Aaron Holiday.
That's
it's
why
time
I'm,
Aaron.
That's
Holiday.
Why I'm not sold on the Bucks because I like Malcolm Brogdon.
We should mention this, and we can do it 2 minutes. Suns aside here.
Yeah.
Sam Amick, while we were recording, broke a story that it looks like Sabonis and the Pacers are not going to come to an agreement on a contract extension. So the Pacers want to try and move him.
Hi, what is his contract? Hi, Tyler Johnson.
So you would want him on the Suns.
He's their type of dude.
He's their type of dude, but that front court is going to get burned.
He's their type of dude.
He's their type of dude.
Oh,
but
do
Sabonis
I want
makes
them?
Sabonis makes no money, so it would have to be like Mikal and...
Really?
It would have to be and... I'm assuming not a lot of folks are high on Cam and Ty for the time being. People probably like Mikal, though. Mikal in the first
don't
this year, maybe?
No, don't do that.
So it would have to be something like that. Dario?
Okay.
I don't know if they can move Dario yet. They can't move Tyler until December, right? Or was that last year?
I think that was... I don't know.
No, that wasn't last year because he
Tyler
wasn't on the
Johnson?
Team
Johnson?
I don't know. My brain wasn't ready for that.
I think they...
Anything else in terms of playoff picture that you're interested in? I tweeted this last night. I think the funniest thing is going to be when Klay comes back at the All-Star break way ahead of schedule, and then the Warriors are like a scrappy 7 or 8 seed, and then the Jazz and Nuggets and the Clippers and Rockets, who are like right next to each other in terms of wins at the 1-4 spot, are saying, actually, we're going to be the 3 or 4 seed. We can be a 1 or 2 seed, but this whole defending, like, dynasty coming back with Klay, Draymond, and Curry all firing, and then they got Russell still, and Marquese Chris looks like something, and that's our first round matchup. We're gonna go play the Spurs or Lakers in the first round. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of my favorite things that could happen.
Yeah.
Pelicans is like an 8 or 7 seed against like Nuggets or Jazz is just like a could the Pelicans beat them type of situation potentially.
We haven't talked about the Jazz.
Yeah, because they're what they are. They're really good, and they're going to be better.
The Bojan and Mike Conley.
I think Rudy Gobert is the most underrated player in the league. I've listened to a lot of preview stuff and podcasts and read stuff and barely hearing about Rudy Gobert. It's not the conversation in Utah isn't like it's that they got Mike Conley. Mike Conley is going to Mike Conley. It's like, no, they added Mike Conley next to Rudy Gobert. And so now it's Rudy Gobert and Mike Conley plus Bojan plus Donovan Mitchell plus Joe Ingles.
That's quite the starting lineup. Like,
Rudy's a top 15 player in the league. I don't know why people don't respect him.
If you construct a starting lineup that...
I was thinking about this when I heard them brought up a day ago. Do they have five top 50 players? Is Ingles a top 50? Ingles and Bojan, are they like there, 60? Because Conley...
I'm not good at projecting these
things. Yeah, Conley, Gobert, and...
Do you actually have a top 100 list? Do you do this?
No.
Okay. Because that would help me if I
did. I do it to book every year just to see where I'm at with the consensus. I think I had him at like 25 this year.
Yeah.
Okay, finals picks. You have the Clippers over the Bucks. I have the Clippers over the Sixers. You have the Nuggets making the Western Conference Finals. I have the Lakers. LeBron gets there, then all systems go, and they should get there.
No arguments. I think the Clippers will be good. We haven't really spent a lot of time talking about them, but I don't know. There's some juice there, as you say.
You picked Giannis for MVP.
Yeah, I'm coming around on that guy. He's fairly good at basketball.
One of us picked Zion for Rookie of the Year. The other one picked Williamson. That was a joke by the editor. Hope you guys appreciate it.
Rudy is Defensive Player of the Year.
Oh, the one team I've been thinking about a lot the past 2 days.
Yes.
That I want to talk about, and this is hilarious that we're ending on this.
Oh, okay, the Knicks.
What do you think about the Bulls?
I could go for their league passy team. Because
I just think
I love their front court.
So my
I hate Zach LaVine, but LaVine, whatever.
So my pitch, Satoransky has been like misutilized in Washington, and it turns out he's like a top 15, 20 point guard in the league. Wendell Carter Jr. is already one of the 10, 15 best centers in the league. He comes out in his second year, which is pretty much his rookie year with how the first year went, and he demolishes. I think Lowry has proved like he's one of the better scoring bigs in the league. Otto Porter, solid. Zach LaVine can get hot. That's how I want to phrase him on this team. He can get hot because I want Sato holding the ball. But those five, is that a playoff team in the East? If that kind of thing happens, that doesn't seem crazy. I mean, we're both high on Satoransky, but a lot of it has to do with Satoransky being like one of the better point guards in the league.
Is Boylan a good coach? I have no idea.
I'm hearing some like it's not as drill sergeant-y bad as the memes suggest. But he's just got to use Carter and Markin in the right way, and I don't think it sounds like he might not.
Yeah.
One of my favorite tweets from last year was there was just a video that went viral in Chicago where it was Boylan just saying something like, Wendell's got to like prove it to me or something. And he was playing really well. And it was just coach speak and all the Bulls fans. Like it had like 57 replies and three favorites. And it was just Bulls fans being like, oh, God.
Suns fans are very like, they're accepting of misery. Bulls fans are like, I just want to throw myself off a bridge type of misery. Honestly, it might be worse there. But I guess that's how Chicago people react. I don't know.
We'll end it there. We've been going a bit. That was fun, though.
It's been a minute.
I like the chance we get to go league-wide, because don't get to that often.
Next podcast, we'll talk about the Suns, I guess. Or Suns podcast.
Season preview expectations will combine two numbers together for a win total. We're not going to be that pessimistic.
I hope it's two numbers, man.
It's going to be two. It'll be two.
I'm just kidding.
It's not going to be two for the Cardinals for a while, though.
Yeah.
Yikes. I said that. Sorry. All right. Bye, everyone.